Here we go again, it's the game we love.
Play game.
Keep our minds on the game.
All the games.
Games people play. Hello, you are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is America's first, best, and only board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
Winner's Bias, a show about board games and jet lag. I'm your host, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right today. How are you doing, Nate?
I am doing okay.
I've realized I've never asked you at the beginning of this. I was
because you don't care.
No,
that's
I don't.
Why ask if you don't care? You can send us questions and comments in real time using the OLARC messaging system on kboo.fm. I actually got it up and running today. I think this getting things loaded in here ahead of time is going to be a big deal.
Congratulations.
We're here today with Cardner from Panda Game Manufacturing, who just got back from Spiel Essen in Germany, the largest board game convention in the world. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Happy to have you.
How are you doing today, Cardner? Because I care.
I'm doing great. I'm actually pretty much over my jet lag, so...
You need to change your intro.
And I'm over my cold that I got at a convention.
Yeah, there's a name for that, right?
Yeah, con cred.
That sounds like I want to go to conventions when you describe it like that.
Yeah, it's, 50,000 people in one building. How can you not catch something?
Yeah, yep.
Delightful.
Yeah. All right, so tell us a little bit about what you do in the hobby and how long have you been doing it?
Yeah, so for my job, I work at Panda Game Manufacturing. We're a manufacturer and printer, and I'm a project manager. So kind of the liaison between a publisher and the team at the factory in China. So mostly I do emails, but also sometimes meetings. It's not very glamorous or exciting. but it is cool to work in the games industry.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short. I'm sure you write the best emails in the business.
I try.
So which one came first? You getting into the game and hobby, or you getting into the work side of it, I guess?
Definitely games and hobbies. That's, part of what makes it possible to be a project manager is being familiar with games, like understanding when someone says, oh, I need 10 meeples, like what that means. So there's a lot of translating, not only to, a team where English isn't their first language, but also like game speak and understanding why it's important that these tiles fit together, or why, it's really important to fit sleeved cards into a plastic tray insert. That's a controversial one. But.
So the things I'm learning about.
I'm aware of that controversy, and as a non-sleever, I am indifferent. How did you find your initial gaming group when you were getting into the hobby?
Oh, I mean, my first gaming group was probably... like my family, my grandparents were big bridge players. So we played a lot of bridge and some very competitive Trivial Pursuit when I was growing up. But here in Portland, when I first moved here, I played a lot at my father's place and met folks through there. And then also at Cloud Cap, their weekly game night on Wednesdays. I met a ton of people through that, including my partner, Alex, who was on the show a few months ago.
Shout out to Cloud Cap Games. Got a shout out anyway, because my last name's Cap, so it's like we're practically siblings, the store and myself. So do you have a favorite game?
I feel like it's always changing, but my favorite game right now is Arx, which came out this year, a couple months ago. The Kickstarter fulfilled, and now it's getting into normal retail distribution. It's kind of like space-themed, a little... tactical, very competitive, but there's also a campaign mode that adds a bunch of like narrative storytelling and really interesting creative things you can do within that system.
I like the sound of the campaign mode. I feel like that's more my speed.
It's only three games for a campaign, so it's very manageable.
Yeah, I'm just getting involved in a campaign of ISS Vanguard, and it took us a month just to get our second one scheduled. I'm playing it tonight.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah.
What about What do you think is a game everyone should be trying out?
Oh, I think about this a lot. Alex and I talk about it a lot, right? Because he works at the store and is always recommending games to people. I think Bonanza. It's a classic and it holds up. It's a trading game about bean farming, which doesn't sound as exciting as Space Combat, but it's so fun. Some of the most fun, like, hilarious moments are from trading beans. You're proposing these, like, completely absurd, horrible trades with your friends.
You're trying to find who the sucker is amongst your friends.
Yeah, it's a lot of, like, wheeling and dealing, which I always like in a game.
So I've heard of this game before, and it's called Bonanza.
Yeah. It's called Bonanza, which is a pun in German.
Well, I was going to say, it should be called Beananza, isn't it, if it's about beans.
Well, I think bone is German
yeah,
for bean.
Yeah,
B-O-H-N. Oh, there you go. That
yeah.
makes sense.
Yeah, it didn't translate well, but...
Yeah, that was mentioned as a possibility for a James Games sometime to get us all to play it.
Bonanza?
Yeah, Bonanza.
Bonanza. You can call it Bonanza. Yeah. There's a lot of like shouting about beans while you're playing.
There's also a new version called Dahlias, if you're more into flowers.
Yeah, fantastic art. I think the old bean art has a lot of charm. That's another controversial one. Some people do not like the way those beans look.
Sorry, to just don't eat them, I guess.
like an inside joke, because I don't know what the beans look like.
Yeah, no, it just... Anytime someone says something like, I don't like the way this food item looks, it just seems like a warning against it, right? All right. And has working in the hobby affected your relationship with it at all? I don't know why I said it like that, but...
I mean, a little bit. It kind of has to, but... if anything, I'm just like more plugged in and thinking about games more, which I don't know if that's good or bad. Especially, you know, Alex works in games too, so that's a lot of what we talk about. That's a lot of real estate in our house is taken up by games. We both bring stuff
home from
work.
Does he even just like make you play games? You're like, I'm tired out from work. I'm tired out of board games. He's like, no, we just got this new one.
Usually it's me doing that to him because I, you know, work from home. So I'm like looking for social interaction and he works at the store. So he just wants to sit quietly.
I will say, having been to your house, I was surprised how it is not a game forward house. Like there's not a lot of games in the immediate space that I was interacting with. And I was like, I expected a lot more. So good on you for that.
Yeah, we keep them squirreled away. There's a big shelf of games in my office. And then there's boxes and boxes of trading cards in a closet upstairs.
Yeah. My biggest fear would be, and like I've even had that fear about like turning my hobby into a radio show. Just being like, am I going to overextend myself and just be like, I don't even like this anymore. Like, why am I doing this? And now it's becoming a job.
I've always been told that because like, I'm originally more interested in video games. And everyone is usually like, oh, I would love to be a game tester. Because then you're playing video games all the time, or board games. I guess that's still a thing. But then you're like, everyone's like, don't do that. You're playing games all the time. You're looking for the bad points of the game. And then you won't like any game anymore. That's just what your mind is set on. It's just finding the terrible points of a game that has to be fixed.
Yeah, my buddy did that. And you're literally just trying to break the game instead of play the game. Which doesn't seem like a good way to get enjoyment out of things.
Yeah, I feel like... In board games, that's kind of more fun. I've only done a little bit of like playtesting and development work, but that's kind of already what you're doing in a board game anyways, right? You're trying to get the best score. You're trying to, you know, find a system to exploit.
You are trying to break the game.
Yeah. So if you're like way too successful, then it's like, okay, that's good feedback.
Yeah. All right. So you just got back from Germany. And as we discussed before, Spiel Essen basically means in German... play to eat, which tickled me. So tell us a little bit about, we'll start with Spiel Essen, but you go to a lot of conventions, and I've never gone to a convention. James has gone to a convention.
So maybe you two should just talk.
But I don't know much about what they're all about. I know a little, but what's Spiel Essen about?
Well, this was my first time going to Spiel. It's very far away from Portland. So kind of an endeavor. But there was a big crew of folks from Portland that went this year, which was cool to be able to hang out and play some games on the other side of the world. It was huge, massive. They capped attendance for the first time ever every day at 50,000 people. So over 4 days, they recorded a little over 200,000 entries, which is wild.
That is bananas. So, because like coming out of the pandemic, does it just seem like there's just a thirst for people now to get like, because conventions have been kind of steadily increasing, and I guess there's an upper limit that they have to have without expanding to other venues. So yeah, is it just like there's just incredible interest amongst hobbyists to go to these?
I think so, yeah. Spiel is interesting because it's a lot more like shopping focused. It's a big event on the calendar, so publishers time new releases around it. So there's games that you can get at the show that won't be available in general retail or especially in the United States for a couple months. So it's not like they'll never be available, but people want them ASAP.
Right? They want to be the first.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very like shopping focused. There's a lot of limited quantities available. There's a lot of lines to get the hot games. But there were also a lot of demo tables, which is not as much the case at American shows, I think. So you could sit down and play the game, sometimes with just people running the demos, sometimes with the actual designers of the game. There were a lot of designers there at the show, which was very cool to see. A lot of the European designers, especially.
I was going to say, I would like to see that more at PAX. There's a lot of that for the tabletop RPGs where you can demo out bigger games, but you can't do that for board games or small ones. You still have to take that chance in just seeing it there and buying one, which I'm being new to the hobbies, I'm not good at. I just see them all lined up and I was like, it's just looking at box art, like, I don't know what I like and don't like.
I feel like anyone new to the hobby makes those decisions based on like judging a book by its cover. I know I bought a number of games. I'm like, wow, this looks amazing. You get it home and you're like, that was not amazing.
Not for you, we should say.
Not for me. Yeah, I know. We all have our own tastes and every game is someone's favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting to see not only games for sale, but they also have like upcoming games that are being demoed or shown off. Sometimes they just have the components laid out like early samples, so you can see. Sometimes it's for like a Kickstarter campaign that's live, so you could, you know, you can't buy it at the show, but you can log on and back it then. And in addition to that, like more consumer facing side, there was also a big like industry business side, because it is the biggest show. Everyone's there. There's a ton of meetings happening in the background. So I had a bunch of meetings with publishers, but I know also publishers are meeting with other companies that are doing different language editions of their games, or even meeting with designers, taking pitches. It's a nice chance to like actually meet up in person. The industry is like scattered all over the world, so people really take advantage of conventions.
And that's the thing that like I personally don't necessarily understand about Spiel Essen, and you know, maybe we're going to go to a break here in just a minute. That's a small break in just a minute, but like I don't know the appeal other than shopping for people to like flock to it in groups of 50,000 a day. Like that just seems mind-numbing that it's mostly a trade show, but everyone else, like there's other conventions that we'll get into where play is more focused, and that's what I want to do. I want to play. I can wait for things to come and be cheaper. Yeah, that's like the weird thing about Spiel.
Yeah, I've definitely, like, I'm on the more meeting side, so I kind of don't understand what people are doing there. But also, I take advantage of the time to play games, so maybe it's not that different.
Yeah, definitely. All right. You're listening to KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate, here with James and Cardner. We're talking about board game conventions. Oh, I just ruined my joke. Oh, gosh. This is Winner's Bind, and I was going to say, we're talking about being conventional. And I just ruined it all. It's just, the radio, the archive of this is going to have an edit where all that's gone. And I'm just going to be like, look how funny Nate is. He's the funny one, not James.
Not anymore. You're not. You had this one chance to beat me, and you failed.
I failed so hard. So yeah, you were saying that you had the chance to play some games at Spiel Essen, but it's not really the focus of it. So do they have like an area for people to play? Or do you have to kind of like at the hotel afterwards, or create your own space for playing the games?
It was definitely more at the hotel. A lot of the hotels around the convention center had areas set up with big tables, and you saw people like with their big stack of games that they had bought at the convention playing the new thing. On the show floor, real estate is really hard to get. So there were demos, but not necessarily, you know, people setting up something that they had bought or brought.
That's the other thing about a shopping-focused convention is, how do you get all that stuff home?
I know multiple people that bought suitcases in Essen, so I think that's a big part of it. And they also do a shipping service. I think somewhere in the convention center you can, like, take your games and they'll pack and ship them for you at, I'm sure, very reasonable prices.
And I mean, the convention being in Germany, being in Europe, there's all the other countries are attached, and it's easy to get to from other countries. So I'm assuming there's a bunch of people from all over Europe. Mm-hmm. And so it's even hard to get your stuff back. You have to travel it that way.
Yeah, well, they got this pretty sweet rail system out there, Trains are the best.
Yeah, and people just driving in, too. I mean, it's a lot harder to get there as an American, but yeah. The Europeans, super easy.
So what are, like, the other types of conventions out there that people might be able to interact with, or, you know, if you wanted to play more games? Because you've gone to a bunch of them at this point.
Yeah, right? there's definitely kind of a spectrum between retail and play. I think sort of the American counterpoint to Spiel, the biggest American show, is Gen Con, which is in August in Indianapolis. And they do their attendance by, like, unique entries instead of turnstile. So it's hard to compare the size, which I think is intentional. But they're a pretty comparable size, I think.
Yeah, well, I know they use the football stadium there as their play area, right? They just put tables all over. I don't know the name of the football stadium, but
I think it's Lucas Oil.
Oh, I would have been right. I could have been so impressive there, too. I'm just dropping the ball.
Yeah, it's wild. It kind of takes over the whole city. Like, all the restaurants around have themed menus, and a lot of, like, the baristas are in costume. It's a very different energy. It's more like people, they're, like, expressing their fandom and enthusiasm. There's a lot of cosplay. And then there's a lot of events beyond just the show floor where, like, you know, publishers have their booths. All of the hotels, like, have meeting rooms and stuff that are set up for RPG or game events. There's a ton of stuff that you wouldn't necessarily see just walking around.
So it's sort of a combination of Spiel and, like, a more play-centric one. It's sort of like a hybrid.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think everyone, this year, everyone who just was attending that I happened to talk to was there specifically to play RPG events, which was interesting because I've never actually seen that, because it's all, like, in the hotels behind closed doors, right? But in the same way that, like...
Make it sound so sordid.
I'm sure it was very above board. But in the same way that, like, you know, companies are taking the advantage of the opportunity to meet in person, like, these people are meeting up with their friends in person that might live in different locations. It's like a big event on the calendar, and this is our chance to play together in person.
So you've been to lots of different countries to these conventions. Have you seen a difference in how the different countries run the conventions, or how the different countries are into the gaming hobby? Like, is there certain games that are bigger, certain play styles that are bigger in these countries than others?
I think it depends more on the show. I mean, I've been, like, all around the US and now to Germany. I haven't been to the UK Games Expo yet.
James, get us tickets.
I didn't even know there was one.
It's getting bigger.
Yeah.
But I
England usually does that. We usually get bigger. You creep out.
It depends more just, like, on what the focus of the show and the show organizers. Like, even in the U.S., like, PAX Unplugged, which you mentioned, is, like, a little more retail-focused. I think part of that's because it's in December, so people are getting holiday gifts.
And I haven't been to Unplugged yet. That one's more board game one, isn't it? Yeah. That's the, that's unplugged, the unplugged part. Yeah, unplugged. I should work that out.
It's acoustic.
Now who's not thinking right?
But there's a couple, BGGCon, Board Game Geek, runs their own conventions, and they have, like, a tiny little floor, only a few booths, but a huge library. So it's almost exclusively gameplay. And it's a cool opportunity to play games that are hard to find or out of print, because they have hundreds and hundreds of games in their library. And that just, it's only tables set up, which is very cool.
I want to circle back to something you said a while, because you said there's cosplay. Mm-hmm. And what type of cosplay does a board game convention invite? Is everyone just walking around in meeple costumes with their arms sticking straight out, or...
I mean, it's kind of everything. It's my main interaction with cosplay at Gen Con is there's a cosplay parade. I think it's on Sunday every year, and somehow it's always like where I'm trying to get and where I am, the cosplay parade is in between. So I have to stand and watch it go by. But it's kind of everything. It's pretty comparable to like a Comic Con or just like a general fandom convention.
I mean, there's a board game for everything, so you could just dress up as anything and say it's from, just attach it to a board game.
That's true. That's true. And since we're mentioning conventions, we should add that Portland has its own convention, GameStorm. So for people who don't want to travel to Germany, I believe it's a more play-focused one. So that's cool. That's always something that happens. It looks like it's happening in March. So that's just something, if you're here and like, oh, I didn't even know there were conventions. There's one in Portland. That's cool.
Yeah, I think GameStorm does a bunch of RPG events, and they also have a big library.
Yeah, and actually that's another thing I wanted to ask about is like the buying and selling of used games at conventions, because it's not just like, you know, paying full price to get it way ahead of time. I say paying full price. I'm always buying used games, so I'm not used to paying full price for games. Though that's going to be a discussion possibly in the future, because I've had thoughts about it. But like you can, there's usually a market or what they call math trades that let you sort of cycle through your games or find stuff that's out of print or only available in certain regions.
Yeah, at Spiel there were some booths that had used games, which was cool because it's like used German games and kind of a different selection than what you get in the U.S. At Gen Con every year they have a really big flea market. It's literally just a huge room with tables arranged in a little one-way maze to get you through, and the price goes down every day. So you can kind of push your luck and like, oh, I really want this, but it's going to be $10 cheaper tomorrow.
I love that.
But it might be gone tomorrow. Is that?
But
like
it might be gone tomorrow.
Oh, the gamble.
Yeah.
I love the gamification of the mm-hmm. used market.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, math trades that you mentioned, which I don't fully understand, but that's like you would arrange it ahead of time and then you would bring like specifically the things you're looking for, and they often have meetups where people can swap stuff around.
Yeah, math trades are my favorite thing because you basically create a matrix of like, I want to get rid of this game and these are the games I would accept in its place, and then a big algorithm runs that's trying to maximize the number of trades that happen, and so you don't know exactly what you're going to get. You might not get anything if you don't equate into the algorithm's math, but you might get something great. And if you're like me and you screw up, you might give someone something great for something good, but not as great.
So you two keep saying this, and I want to be the voice of the outside person. Are you saying map or math trades?
Math, M-A-T-H.
What's the math is like the price math of it? Why is it called math
I think
trades?
It's because it's like an algorithm. Like if I have a game, you know, I have a copy of Bonanza and I want a copy of Settlers of Catan, but someone else, they don't want to make that trade, but they will trade their copy of Love Letter for my copy of Bonanza. And then, so it like makes a chain, like the little red paperclip thing.
Yeah.
So you like put your inputs and outputs and then it runs, it does the math for you.
Oh, okay. I'm still confused, but
I've only ever seen
there.
It for board games. I don't know if other people do this.
No, they don't. And it like blows my mind because I'm like, record swaps, it would be amazing to do this for record swaps. And like any other thing that you often would see, like DVDs, books, I'm just listing media, but it's possible.
Physical media.
Yeah, it's possible to do it with anything, but only board games does it. And I don't understand why it hasn't taken off in other realms.
It's those gamers trying to gamify everything.
Yeah, I have thought that there is a board game that could be made about trying to buy and sell used board games. There's like a way that you could make it, because it is always playing the game. I always post stuff when I'm selling it. That's like, well, I'm going to post it for this much, but I know internally I would accept this much for it. And when people don't, this is saying too much, don't listen to this, listener. When people don't ask, I'd be like, okay, cool. Like, why wouldn't you try? So we're off the convention talk here. James, do you have anything else since you have actually attended conventions?
Oh, I think, like I said, I usually go to the conventions for the video games. I've only done the board games a little bit. So I think the biggest board game thing with me was the renting part. I enjoyed that, where you could go and just rent the game for the day. Do they do that a lot at all the other conventions you've been to, or was that just like, was that more of a bigger PAX thing than it was elsewhere?
Yeah, that's, I've been calling it the library, where it's like you can go in, and usually it's like a physical room where there's shelves, and you can take your game and check it out.
Yeah.
And depends on the show what the like turnaround time is, but usually it's overnight at least. And there's like a limit on how many games you could check out, so you have to coordinate with your group who's going to get what and how to return them.
And some poor volunteer has to count all the bits every time.
Yeah, there's usually a big push for like volunteer for the 2-hour shift in the library and you get a free badge or something. So that's a super easy way to get a ticket to a convention, actually, is volunteering either with the library, or a ton of publishers ask for people to demo their games. So you like learn the game and have a 4-hour shift teaching it to folks, and then you get into the show for the rest for free.
So another thing I want, this to go out to both of you. Like I said, when you go to a convention or even to a store and you see all the games there, if you two haven't played the game, how do you decide on which game you're going to get? If you go to a convention and it's a new game, how do you decide if you want to try it out or if you want to buy it or not? What brings you to do that step?
By being obsessively on like Board Game Geek and taking in other board game media and just being like, I already know that has interest to me or not interest to me. You get to know designers. But really, like, the hobby does take up way more of my life than I would care to admit. But most of it is playing at this point, so that's good. During the pandemic, that was not the case.
Yeah, I think by designers or publishers, I mean, it's like books. Like, if you like an author, you're probably going to like their next thing. Or a lot of it, I think, is still word of mouth. Like, people who know what you like or have similar taste to you will recommend stuff that they've found. Or I know some people just find random strangers on Board Game Geek that have similar tastes with them and just follow them and like see what they get.
All right. I'm embarrassed that being a volunteer coordinator, I did not think about volunteering for board game conventions, and that's super embarrassing. All right. We're going to have to wrap up here. Cardner, thank you so much for being here and talking with us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
And thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kboo.org. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. If you enjoy the program today, please consider showing your support by making a donation. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but how you pretend to know what board games are talking about along the way. Have a good one.